brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Okay, Tom, welcome to the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Excited to be on. I listen to you a lot and listen to your guests and things. And yeah, really excited.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to have you on. I reached out to you. You'd submitted one of the questions of the month and I checked out your site, D&D at Work, which we'll get into. So it just prompted me to reach out and find a wee bit about that. But, you know, not only that, find out a bit about yourself too and your sort of corner of the hobby. So maybe just before we dive into the sort of history and origin stuff, give us a wee overview of the D&D at Work project that you've got going on.
Yeah, okay. So I've been running that for almost 2 years now, and it's taken my love of all things role-playing, tabletop games, and applying it to leadership. So when I was DMing different games like Dungeons & Dragons and things like that, it dawned on me that there's quite a lot of parallels between role-playing games and tabletop games and the skills you need in the workplace. And it got me thinking. There's a book called Me, Myself, and Why by Jennifer Ouellette. And it explains that when you're playing games like this, particularly role-playing games, the memories you have of the gaming sessions are remembered in your memory as a real experience. So I'm toying with this idea of using games to be able to teach people these sort of softer skills in a safe way. So you're not unleashing someone to lead a team. You can like actually get them to practice these things and experience them for real, either through through role-playing games. I've been investigating mega games and, of course, war games as well, tabletop miniature games. So it's basically taken all of my love of that sort of stuff and my love of the leadership side of it, which I do in my day-to-day work, and meshed it all together in one, I was going to say one unhealthy sort of thing, but I think there's a lot to it, yeah.
I always love to hear these crossovers, especially when it pertains to the hobby and folks, you know, they've got a completely different skill or just an industry or something that there happens to be an overlap that they could create for themselves. So how did this go from an idea to you beginning to put it in practice or implement it?
Yeah, I'm one of these people who, if I've got a bit of free time, I like to fill it up. And I'd been toying with the idea for a while. I'd written a business book about business development back in the day, and I thought, I've always wanted to do something that actually crosses into the hobby side of it. And I was thinking, what hasn't been done before? And the more I thought about it, the more parallels I drew. And then I was like, right, I've just got to do it. And I'm pretty sure the first few posts that I wrote on my blog were abysmal. But, you know, you just keep going and keep going and honing it. And it got me thinking about the hobby in a different way. So now when I play games with my friends and my gaming groups, often I'll get examples of things that I can sort of draw on, and it gives another dimension to the hobby, which I'm sure you find with the podcast.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So, I mean, how does this actually work? Like, there's a website, so are you providing resources that people could use remotely? Are you delivering actual sessions? Like, talk to us a wee bit about that.
So I decided... I'm not offering anything yet. So I'm using it as a way to explore the topic. So I write a blog post every week and I'm just exploring the topic. The other thing I'm doing is on the back of the sort of exploration, I've been drawing together a rule set that can be used in the workplace. So it's very simple, really bare bones, can be used for any genre. So I'm developing that, and I've got some resources on the site for that. And then I've also been, when I've been doing multiplayer, I'm quite interested in emergent play where you've got players with different objectives, a bit like the old Rogue Trader type game, and how that sort of emergent play comes out. So I've got a few packs that I've done for campaigns that I've put on the site as well. But I'm not offering paid dungeon mastering or games mastering or anything like that yet. We'll see what happens. You never know.
I really like the thought of like an HR department bringing in an RPG element when they're disciplining somebody, you know, they've got to actually roll on a D20 to not get the tin tag.
Yeah, that's right. If you roll a one, you're out.
Yeah. I mean, it's if you've listened to the podcast lately and some of my ramblings around, like, you know, working on this rule set, and I described it as like a hobby, a part of the hobby that you can take away from any sort of table, whether that's the gaming table, the painting table, etc. You know, it's something that you could just work on in your head when you're away, maybe doing something else. Is that what you're finding a lot with this? That this is just something that maybe keeps your brain engaged in a not fully escapist, but just a sort of creative kind of way?
Definitely, definitely. So it's that creative outlet. I mean, I paint minis and all of that, but this is just another facet that keeps my mind turning over. Yeah, and there's always, it's funny, isn't it? Like, inspiration will hit at the weirdest of times. You know, I could be in an HR meeting and it'll pop in my head then, probably when it shouldn't do. But yeah, exactly that. It's that sort of additional creative outlet, which I'm seeing a lot through this podcast and the Discord. There's heaps of creative projects that people are doing, and they're so varied. So it's like that for me, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, take us back then, Tom, to the beginning of your hobby story. Like, how did you initially encounter this world, and what were your first steps?
Well, funnily enough, it was my dad brought back Dungeons and Dragons. He was on the oil rigs and brought back Dungeons and Dragons and played it with me and my brother when we were in primary school. And that sort of got me fired up, that and Lord of the Rings. So I got into Dungeons and Dragons, in a, not playing it properly to begin with, just messing around with it and trying to work out this how these strange rules worked. And then I soon found miniatures. Again, it was my dad bought me some miniatures, and we were messing around painting them up with the old enamel paints, which seem pretty unuser-friendly now compared to the contrast paints and things you get today. And then when I hit secondary school, some friends and I worked out that we were into the same thing, and I discovered Rogue Trader. So this is back when the first edition 40K was coming out. And that's one of my prized possessions. I've still got that book. I'm not sure how it survived all that time, but I've still got that. And all those crazy scenario tables and things in the back. Yeah, I still look at that with nostalgia. And so we played quite a lot in secondary school. The old Warhammer second edition 40K came out as well. I really did a bit of Necromunda. So there's a good friend of mine, Steve, he had all this stuff. And so we used to play a lot. We had in my attic above the garage, we had this attic with a big ping pong table that we never played ping pong on. We used it to push toy soldiers around. So That was awesome looking back on it. Then from there, I think like a lot of people, I had a bit of a break. So I found that the Games Workshop prices, I was very poor as a student. I couldn't really afford the figures anymore. So when I went to university, it was more role-playing. Dungeons and Dragons, Vampire, all that stuff. And then from there, I basically dropped out of the hobby completely, which is something that a lot of people seem to do. And then when they hit my age now, people are coming back into it again and rediscovering it. So during that time, I moved from Scotland over to Australia via New Zealand, and dabbled a little bit with 40K, but couldn't get into it back then. And then, probably 8 or 9 years ago, discovered Dungeons and Dragons again with a random group of people who have now become a really close group of friends. And with that came the miniatures. And I rediscovered that love of painting miniatures again. And I don't know if you ever got any of those Reaper boxes that were on Kickstarter, where you get 150 minis for next to nothing per miniature. So I bought a couple of those, and that was just feeding this painting frenzy. Contrast paints has helped with that too. And then I've managed to get my group into Frostgrave. We've discovered Space Weirdos, Gaslands, getting the matchbox cars and smashing them apart and rebuilding them. Well, I'm out of the people I play with, I'm the one who collects the most of the miniatures. So I set up the games and we all play them. And yeah, we've been enjoying those. One page rules as well has come up. It's trying to, I think from a tabletop gaming point of view, I'm trying to claw back that Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader era type of gaming again, which Space Weirdos really, really sort of scratches that itch. And then, of course, I'm doing role playing and things as well. And then some friend of mine, we set up like a little mini con for our friends. And I don't know if any of your listeners do this. I know you do it on a bigger scale by going to bring out your lead and things like that, which I'm living vicariously through the Discord, being so far away. But we do a little mini con ourselves where we crack out different role-playing games. And I've started doing multiplayer Space Weirdos games at those, which people have been really getting into. So that's it. I've got that big gap in the middle, and I look back at it and go, I probably could have filled that in with some gaming, but it's not an uncommon story, you know. So that's it in a nutshell. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you see it so often, don't you? And part of me wishes that I'd stuck by it through, you know, a lot of my life, especially adolescence, and that. I think I would have benefited immensely from it, but coming back, you know, the magic's still there. When you talk about discovering the miniatures when you were young, how did you actually get your first few miniatures? Because obviously, like, Games Workshop stores in Scotland were few and far between, so how did you kind of pick those up?
Yeah, so I grew up near St Andrews, and there was a toy shop there. I can't remember the name of it now. It was right tucked in the corner of the main square. And that used to have little blister packs of the Citadel miniatures and the Metal Magic miniatures. So we used to go in, and my mum and dad would buy us like a mini each, and we'd take it away. But I still got some of those. So that was some of those were like the pre-Slaughter Games Workshop orcs and things like that, which I look back on. I'm really glad I've still got them. But yeah, we used to buy one or two at a time with no plan, no army. Didn't even know you could really play a game with them. Like, we used to mess around on the floor and make regiments and things, but there was no structure to it. But yeah, it was from the toy shop of all places. And then there's a Games Workshop in Edinburgh. So there was a Games Workshop that obviously sold all sorts of stuff. And then the Virgin Megastores back then used to have it all in as well. So that was the main source, but there was no plan or anything until I discovered Rogue Trader. And then I got that box of those plastic beaky marines. I got a box of those, and that was it. I was absolutely hooked. Like you're saying about the magic still being there, it's definitely still there when it comes to that stuff. Yeah.
The toy shop story, I think, is pretty common as well. Like, obviously, I think most kids in the 90s that were reading White Dwarf would know by memory all the towns that had stores in them. Like, if we were going to... You would kind of know Glasgow, Edinburgh, they've got them. But there was, like you're saying, a lot of toy shops. They carried some Games Workshop stuff, so there was that wee bit of a hunt. Like, we'd go on holiday down south, and I remember it would be like, you know, a Toy Master shop or that, and you're going into it and you're thinking there is a chance that they will have some Warhammer stuff, and sometimes they did, and it was like finding gold, basically. Like, you'd go in, and I just remember we were in this, me and my brother, in this shop, and I got like a box of Plague Marines, like, you know, the old plastic ones, and it was like,
yeah,
I didn't expect that, but it was just such a bonus, such a surprise. So it was all part of the hunt. Like, you just didn't know there was a chance.
Yeah, that's right. It was. It definitely made or broke the holiday, didn't it? They always used to have things like HeroQuest in there too, which was definitely one of my gateway drugs. It was the HeroQuest game.
So did you own HeroQuest?
Yeah, I've still got it, and I keep using bits and pieces of it for different things. But I don't know how I've managed to keep all these things, because over time, you know, things get lost or they get disappear in moves. But yeah, HeroQuest was one of those ones where I'd just sit there. I remember I got it for my birthday, and I'd just sit there and just like set up little dioramas with it, and before even actually playing it. Yeah, that was really good. I've still got fond memories of HeroQuest. And I actually played it with my kids a while ago, and they loved it too. So it's a good start.
Yeah, aye. What age are your kids?
13 and 11.
Yeah, they've had a few games with you then.
Yeah, they like the role-playing games. My daughter in particular is pretty creative when it comes to D&D and things. They both love HeroQuest, and then my son enjoys the wargaming side of it. So we played a bit of Dragon Rampant. What was the other game? Dragon Rampant Frostgrave. And he's recently wanted to get into 40K, so we split the starter set and have started playing that as well. Yeah, so it's I'm managing to see that magic unfold for him too, which is great.
Yeah, based on like the many folk I've spoke to that are parents, and the overriding advice seems to be like, don't force it, but you often find that it just comes naturally, because a lot of the times kids just see what their parents are doing, and half the time they will take an interest. Of course, if they don't, there's nothing wrong with that and nothing you could do about it, really. Yeah. But it is really nice to hear when it's being received positively and it's something that you could kind of do together.
Yeah, that's right. And you're right about not forcing it. I take great pains not to force it, but sometimes I'm like, they haven't quite got the passion that I've got. So I'm like, come on, maybe we could play another game. But then I'm like, no, I've just got to back off and just leave them to it, and they'll find it on their own. Exactly right.
I've found now that, because I've got a wee room at home that I do my work in, like when I'm working from home, which is, a couple of times a week. And I've got a glass cabinet in there that I'd bought to put all my painted stuff in. Mm. And now, my daughter, she's 3, and she's very sociable and a big talker and stuff. So she'll come in, and it must have been me initially, talking to her about it, maybe when she was a baby or that. But she'll come in now and ask me questions. And it's quite cool because I'm now keeping her up to date on what I'm painting. So I'm like, I got this guy done last night. I got the base coat on. And she's like, she's not feigning interest, because I don't think at 3 you feign interest. I don't think it's possible.
Right, yeah.
So there is a genuine interest there, and she'll come in and she'll want to talk to me about, or maybe even get the cabinet open and just look at a few of them. And she's got a very careful nature too, so I trust her not to just come in and get wired in about them. She respects that I'll say to her, we need to be careful with these. So I'm keen to see where that goes. The next step really is, I've got her the Labyrinth RPG book for her Christmas. I bought it a while ago, but I was looking at it and I was thinking, I think it's a wee bit too soon for this, but I reckon around Christmas time when we're cracking the film out, and it'll be new for me because I've never done RPG before. I've tentatively read through the book, so I think I could just about manage it, but I guess we'll figure it out together. She'll maybe end up keeping me right rather than vice versa.
Exactly. That's half the fun though, isn't it? Discovering it together. I've noticed that with my son, is he's much more engaged with the mini side of it when he's got his own minis that he's painted up, regardless of the quality of the painting. He's like really into it when he's using his own figures. So to begin with, he was using mine. And I was like, this is cool. We've got fully painted armies and stuff. But what he really wanted was to play with his own ones. It took me a little while to work that out. So discovering that sort of together is one of the joys for sure.
Yeah, it's good that he's doing the painting as well. Is that something that you'll kind of do together then?
Yeah, it is. And that's, I find it really meditative painting. So, sometimes it's nice. So him, so my son and my daughter, sometimes the three of us will sit there and paint together. And I'm sitting in the middle shaking the paint pots and all that sort of thing.
But they're
actually a very, they get in quite a nice zone with it. They're pretty calm and they're actually thinking about what the figures look like and everything. It's really great fun.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant to hear. I'm saying, anything that you can share with your kids is good. But if it's something you're really, really into, then that is very useful. Like, I spend a lot of time pretending to have tea parties, but I wouldn't say that's my hobby, although it's fast becoming it. Sitting there with a cup and a saucer and probably like a daft hat and stuff. So I do a lot of that at the moment, but again, all part of the fun.
Exactly. You can't beat a good tea party.
Yeah. I've eaten a lot of imaginary scones. So... you say you're in the fortunate position to play quite a lot by the sounds of it. So is that a weekly thing then? And is that quite local to you?
Yeah. So the group that I found was in Perth. So we found each other through a local game shop. Some of them live quite close to me, some of them a bit further away. But we play a fortnightly, I run a fortnightly game of D&D, which has been running for about 6 years, I think, where we've sort of done different generations in the same campaign world. So that's quite involved, which is great fun. We also play a monthly game with a slightly different group, with some shared members. And then maybe once a month or twice a month, we might play skirmish games. And I'm trying to persuade people to play bigger games. So I'm going to roll out. I think the way to do it is to roll out like a participation game where I'll have all the figures and we'll maybe have three people aside and go for it in an afternoon. But I'm the one who's really into that sort of thing. So I think to lure people in, I've got to set it all up. So that's something I'll be doing in the future.
I think that's one of the reasons it's kind of like I love the thought of playing weekly, and I probably could manage it. There's a couple of people I could definitely get a weekly game with, at least most weeks. But I think the thing that's putting me off is the preparation. Like, it's a miniatures game, isn't like we've got chess and we get chess out and we set chess up, and you could literally just turn up and get to it. But I'm always finding, well, what scenario are we playing? What's the warbands? What's the stats? And it would be me that would do all that, and that puts me off as just the overhead. I reckon I would maybe rather aim for one, like, once a month that I've been able to prepare for, rather than always trying to catch up with it, if you like. So I don't know what the answer to that is. Maybe there's no answer. Maybe just keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think so. I think monthly games are a good idea if you can put more effort into it. The other thing is as your kids get older, you find you have a little bit more time as they're wanting to do stuff with their friends or what have you. So you can actually claw a bit more time than when they're younger and need a lot more attention. Mm-hmm. But the monthly game's a good one. And that's so when I try and set up the like multiplayer games, I try and make them with, you know, secret objectives. Sometimes people betraying other people. I think I've been a bit too influenced by the old Inquisitor 28 type movement and that sort of espionage type style of game. But by having them spread further apart, you can get a bit more involved with the scenario planning for sure. So it's probably not a bad idea to stick to that until you can free up some more time.
Mm-hmm. So that sort of multiplayer aspect that you're talking about, Is that kind of what we see in a lot of board games where you'll have four or five people playing a game and there's a traitor mechanic, for example. Everyone thinks they're working for something, but there's some person secretly spoiling it and everyone's paranoid about who it is. Do you like the thought of bringing that into miniature games?
Definitely. I must have some sort of mean streak in me that I keep hidden, except when I'm gaming. But I do like that idea of people having so I ran a game, the first Space Weirdos game I ran. We had six players, each with different gangs, and I think some people were like the enforcers, a little bit based on sort of Necromunda, and we had Inquisitors in there. Everyone had a secret objective, so no one quite knew what everyone else was doing. Then we had everyone could communicate through post-it note. So then there were all messages flying around, and people were then getting paranoid about who was sending who messages and who was teaming up with who. And I'd done it so that each pair had opposing objectives. So there was always going to be friction. But then what happened was people were making alliances that I hadn't even thought about and trying to help each other with their end game. And it turned into something completely different to what I'd expected. I was thinking it would just be like a sort of standard war game, but it actually had this sort of meta game of alliances and all sorts of things going on, which I thought was brilliant. And I haven't been able to quite capture that again. I've been trying, but haven't been able to quite get that again. So I'm trying to work on another scenario where I can get that sort of emergent play coming into the game.
Mm. So what sort of stuff are you painting then at the moment? Are you got any projects on the go, like on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, so I was painting, like I said, a lot of D&D miniatures. So I was buying interesting monsters and getting into those. Just now, I've been buying a few resin, 3D printed figures, and painting those. mainly in the Warhammer 40K type universe. So I'm always looking for figures that aren't, they're more of the background figures or background people in the 40K universe. So I've got a few of those on the go. So there's some quite cool prints out there that you can get hold of. And then my son and I split Warhammer 40K. So I'd had a big project trying to paint up all the Tyranids for that, which contrast paints absolutely helped with that. I could pay was painting, I think, 15 Space Marines. I had all these Tyranids. I got through them pretty quick and they looked really good. I was really pleased with those. And then some Sisters of Battle. So what I've got, I find it difficult to work on one thing at a time. So my painting desk, which is next to me over here, I've got maybe three or four projects going at the same time and a handful of D&D fantasy figures as well. And then I just sort of pick and choose whatever I fancy at the time. And then, it was difficult doing the Sisters of Battle combat patrol because I thought, right, I'm going to do it all at one in one go. And that became a bit of a slog because I really wanted to get it finished fast.
Necromunda with Napoleon, Frostgrave with Florence Nightingale, or Battlemasters with Barry Gibb. Our question of the month for September 2024 is, which person, dead or alive, would you love to play a miniatures game with and why? And also, what game would you play? Record your audio clip by going to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail, and I need them in by Friday the 27th of September. That's bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail, and now back to the show.
I think that was a mistake. I like to sort of just dip in and out of things. So I've actually got Advanced Hero Quest, all the heroes and the henchmen. They're sitting there half painted. I've just got to finish their swords and then they're done. Not one project. It's many varied projects. I'm just looking over there now. I've got a cloud giant that's been sitting there in a half-painted state for 2.5 years, maybe. maybe get onto that
Is
one.
Is that the Raoul Partha guy? The old Raoul Partha one?
No, it's... what company? I can't remember what company it's from. Maybe Blacklist Games or something like that. Yeah, I can't remember now. But I got carried away and then... Yeah, struggled with it and stopped and put it to one side.
Are you cognitively fine with seeing all your projects? Like, I know for myself, I like to kid my brain on by, you know, I'll only see the two units I'm working on just now, or the one warband, and my brain somehow thinks, oh, it's fine. But if I saw everything, I'd just be like, there's too much to do.
Yeah, that's funny because I see it as a... Yeah, I don't get overwhelmed with it. If I have one massive project and it's all out, it gets a bit overwhelming. But having these, they're almost like warband size projects that I've got, and I can see them sort of beginning to take shape. No, I love it. I find that really, it's satisfying, I suppose. And even though some of those miniatures stay on the desk for a long time, it stops me getting bored with just one thing. I can then... You know, if I'm fed up with painting a space marine, I can jump off and do like some sort of mage or a hero quest thing, then jump back to the space marine later.
How have you found putting together and painting them up? Because presumably the 40K stuff you're talking about is like the latest, newest stuff. Mm. How have you found that?
Yeah, it's a lot more intricate than it used to be. So I've made a couple of mistakes, but it's once I got into understanding how the things fit together, it was a bit different to what I'd remembered. You get parts of models, like with the Tyranids, for example, where there's one leg and half a body and then two legs and another part of a body, and you're trying to put it together like a 3D jigsaw. So that definitely took a bit of getting used to. And if you make a mistake with super glue, it can be quite difficult to undo. I found it quite tricky. Yeah, I'll be honest. But maybe I haven't got the right tools.
It must just add so much time to people's workflow. You know, if you mainly work in the modern plastics and it's a sprue and it's flat packed, and it's like, you know, a whole new dimension. I mean, I know when you get a lump of metal, there is a level of cleanup. You know, you probably give it a wash and file a few bits off it, but in the main, like, stick it to the base and you're ready to get an undercoat on and away you go. So
yeah, exactly. There is a lot to be said. I like getting the old metal miniatures, and I scour eBay for some. I don't have too many, but yeah, if I see some from the past that I really like, get me, I'll get into it. And there's the weight of the old models. There's something about having that bit of metal in your hand. It feels pretty serious when you've got it. Whereas some of these big kits you get now, they're all plastic and they feel really light. It's a very different feeling. But maybe that's just nostalgia talking.
Yeah, I've got Games Workshop's, I wouldn't say they're brand new, but, you know, within the last few years, there's like the Skeletons Warband and there's Chaos Marauders as well. I think they're actually quite old, but potentially still on sale. And then I've got the Alien miniatures, like literally the film Alien. I've got them as well in plastics. And I found with those, on all of these, I've stuck them. One pences under them just to give them a wee bit more weight, because it was almost like they were weightless. Like you could have put them on a set of scales, and I don't even know if it would have registered. So I just like to feel like there's something there, even though it must just be all in the head. So maybe nostalgia.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I like those Alien miniatures that you've done. I think they're great.
Yeah, I was pleased with them, and you maybe heard me saying like they were the hardest things I've ever built. Like. Literally needed to go down and say to my wife, like, go and help me with this. So they were very difficult to put together. I think part of it was my fault, because I took everything out of the sprue at once and there was actually an order I should have been following. So it was my fault. And I did once have a box of the newish Necrons, which I just sold straight away because I didn't like the look of them, really. I think I was, when I bought them, I was remembering, like, I got a Necron on the front of White Dwarf in the 90s, and it looked a bit more like Terminator 2, whereas these things, when I opened them, I was just a bit like, these are different, and they were in 60 different pieces as well, so I moved them on. But it's all down to your own preference, isn't it?
Yeah, you definitely want that Terminator 2 vibe. I picked up some of the old androids from Space Crusade, which I think were the precursor to Necrons. And they've got that sort of Terminator vibe, except they all look like they're grinning madly.
I've got it laid out in front of me because I keep a game set up in my office. Just, you know, if I'm having a cup of tea, I could just do a few turns. So again, this always works well on an audio podcast, but Tom could see it. So I've got these little Terminator 2... I think they're River Horse miniatures, so they've got the license for that. So I use them, and then I've got my wee androids as well. Struggling to even see where the camera is.
Oh, yeah, brilliant.
So we sort of retro-looking androids. So I quite like awesome. To, you know, in the middle of the day, like I say, if you just got the kettle on or that, and... you know, you would end up just like looking at the internet with no purpose. I find it's better just to step away and say, like, let's just do one turn of a game. And you maybe think up something, or you figure something out. So it's just a good way to kind of have an ongoing, no stakes solo game.
That's a really good idea. Yeah, I like that. My family were away for a couple of weeks last holidays, and I set up a bit of a solo game using Space Weirdos. But I think I should have done it like you did, like you've suggested, just a little bit, maybe one turn at a time, and then just like sort of step away from it. I was trying to do a whole game in an evening, and it got a bit much for me. So I think that's a really good move. I like it.
It's the curse of the miniature gamer. It's like keeping a game set up would be great, but most people just can't do that. Like you couldn't really... have on the dinner table just a game set up and it's tea time. And if there is somewhere that you could just leave a game, and it's, I think it's the wee mat that I've got there, it's like, I think it's 22 inch by 30 inch. So it's a small size, small footprint, but there's still enough room to maybe do a bit of five a side or whatever. So I just kind of play away with that and chop and change it now and then. So It sounds like you're right into space weirdos. How did you discover that?
Yeah, that's a good question. It might have been through your Discord, actually. I think someone might have suggested it on that. And then I bought the rules on a bit of a whim. And then just, yeah, absolutely loved it. I played a little bit against myself just to see how it worked. Then I roped my son in for a game. And then I went full bore and decided to run it for my friends, for six of us. Seven of us. I GM'd it and the six of them played. And I just found that sort of alternate movement. Everyone's, even when you're firing at people, there's an option that the enemy might fire back. Everyone's sort of engaged with the game as it goes. There's no downtime as such, so it worked really well. So I've since joined their Space Weirdos Discord as well, and that's full of really fascinating stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you've answered some of my question there just about what appeals to you, but I mean, aside from the intuitive and fun rules, I think there's an aesthetic pull there too, isn't there? Even though it's a miniature agnostic game, it just has this kind of feel of like, these are the type of miniatures I want to use for this, and they look a bit old school, a bit punky. It's definitely not your Stormcast Eternals lining up on the tabletop. So is that a big part of it as well, just that aesthetic feel?
Oh, 100%, 100%. So I love that. I'm a big sucker for the 40K lore. And in particular, the Inquisitors, and just getting those sort of old school, yeah, like punky type miniatures, being able to create Inquisitor type warbands, going into the hives and looking for chaos and rooting out heresy and all that good stuff. It just, yeah, it scratches that itch for sure. So it's definitely that aesthetic. It really appeals to me. So I've dabbled with, I think it was Xenos Rampant, which is a good rule set, but it just doesn't have that spiky aesthetic that I was looking for. So the rules are great, but I guess I have to put that aesthetic on it myself, whereas Space Weirdos definitely had that right from the get-go.
I got a wee shot of that at Bring Out Your Lead. Ed's a big fan of it, and he was running the game as well, which looked brilliant. I didn't actually take part in the big game. I wanted to do some wondering about, but it looked really fun, and from the wee shot that I had of it as well, even for my small brain, I didn't struggle to start picking up like what I was meant to be doing. And the fact as well that we see games like that now, and like you're saying, even when it's not quote unquote your turn, you're still engaged because you might still be needed. Whereas your older style game, you could literally go and make the tea and come back and in time for your turn again. So I know there's a place for that, but I do like a game where I think we're all more engaged in it throughout.
Yeah, I do. I do as well. I think it's really important. So it's funny you should say you could pick up Space Weirdos pretty quickly. So I've played it with people who have never played miniatures games before. Like, we've all role played, and the ones who hadn't played miniatures games before picked up really quickly and understood what was going on, and then trying to bend the rules and get one over on the games master, the normal stuff. But they all really picked it up really well. It was good. It was really good. So it was a good game in that regard as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it. Not that it's an area of my expertise at all, but nobody likes to feel stupid, do they? And again, I know that there is a place for immensely complex games for like power players and that, but in the main, if you're bringing somebody new to the table, the last thing you want them to feel is that they're lost or they lose track of what's going on. They feel stupid, because at that point I don't think you could salvage the situation. They might finish the game with you, but nobody's had fun at that point, have they? So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's a good multiplayer game as well. So I ran a game, I made a campaign again for, I mean, six of us were playing, and this was more Inquisitor based, but again using Space Weirdos. And I did it over an afternoon where we had 1v1 games. So we had three 1v1 games each, and then we did a big multiplayer game at the end where the winner was trying to get, I think it was a packet of information off world, and then everyone was going up against them. And it worked perfectly for that, and everyone could pick it up easily enough. Some people hadn't played games like that for years. But that was an interesting one. Again, people had secret objectives, but the end, it's all like this sort of scenario design, trying to get everyone, when you've got multiple players, trying to get everyone doing what you think they will do as part of the design was quite tricky. And there's been some learnings from that about how to have multiple objectives, but I think there needs to be some sort of overarching, clear overarching objective for people to go after as well, so that you can, so that everyone can stay engaged. So as well there, as well as being engaged during the turns, like during the gameplay, you also want them to be engaged with whatever the objective is. And I've been experimenting with that.
Yeah, I'd kind of been toying with, I think it was sort of last winter, I'd been looking into, you know, how to really get into the story of a solo game. And like you were saying, it was the, you know, there's the overall objective here. Say I've got a party of four or five, a warband of four or five. So there's the main thing that we need to do. But say I've got my barbarian and I draw an objective, and that was, again, it's all tailored to the miniatures that they'd be fighting, the NPCs. Mm. But say there's like a champion NPC. So I draw this card and it's like, okay, the barbarian, her objective is to fight this character somehow, you know, get up there and fight them. And the other one, maybe it's, you've just got to take this thing and put it here. Like, it's just a drop off. And then the other one, it's, you know, that, so a lot of bookkeeping. But if you're doing a solo game and you're giving yourself plenty of time and space and not too many miniatures, I think you could toe that line between, you know, not overwhelming yourself with info and just a good immersive story. So it's always a work in progress, but it's something I'm really interested in.
Yeah, I find the story side of games, I love that aspect of it. And it's amazing how story just sort of begins to appear. So you set up a couple of objectives like that, and then suddenly you find out that that's the barbarian's lifelong enemy, or, you know, things begin to sort of formulate in your head. And then the dice rolls begin to inform it as well. And you can go from having just pushing models around on the table to suddenly you've got this massive cinematic life or death scenario playing out just to get a few prompts. And then it begins to sort of percolate in your head and you come up with all this great stuff. And that can work on your own, but it can also work if you've got a group of like-minded people who can all bounce ideas off each other as well.
And going back to like what you were saying at the start about, you know, when people play RPG games and that their memories are almost similar to if they'd encountered that in real life, these stories as well, when you think back to a game that you've just played like that, it's quite real in your head, the story, and you can kind of see what had happened. It's not like arbitrary, again, like chess is a good game, but you don't come away from a game of chess thinking, what a great medieval battle. Like, the pawn stabbing the bishop, like, and again, I think it encourages you to keep that going as well. Like, if you've played a good game with some characters, you want to find out what happens next as well, rather than just saying, okay, let's move on to new miniatures, new game. So I lots to explore on that front. Have you ever tried Rangers of Shadowdeep? I know you mentioned Frostgrave. It seems like that would be up your street.
Do you know what, I've been wanting to try it and I haven't got around to it. I've been doing Frostgrave mainly from, it's Joseph, isn't it, who makes that. But I've been keeping an eye on it, and it looks, I've read some actual plays. There's some great like battle reports from Rangers of Shadowdeep, and it looks right up my street, but I haven't had a chance to give it a go yet. I did try to use Frostgrave. What was I doing? I experimented doing Frostgrave solo. I was just trying out some new rules, I think. And I just couldn't win. I don't know. I must have made the scenario too difficult. I tried it three or four times and just got thrashed by the enemy every time. I like the idea, Shadow of Rangers of Shadowdeep, because it's that long-term campaign and the characters evolve a lot more than I think the Frostgrave ones do.
Yeah, I know. We really enjoyed. We played game quite a lot of it a couple of years ago, and we'll definitely go back to it. But I enjoyed the whole hobby and aspect of it, because you've got the book and you didn't necessarily have to play the scenarios in order. But I liked this. You know, I'd plan ahead. I'd look at what's the next mission. Okay, I need six or seven giant spiders, and I don't have them. So that's a and it, not that I'm needing an excuse to go and buy stuff, but you know, get yourself, it's a low buy in, six spiders and maybe need this certain bit of terrain. And I'm thinking about, well, how could I make that? And we did the Blood Moon one, which was the werewolf one. And I remember thinking about, like, I needed to get a pond. I needed to figure that out. I needed to figure out how to have a building that they could go in with different rooms. And, you know, I just used, like, the wee one's building blocks to lay that out. So just all sorts of creative ways that, you know, places an onus on you to provide something for yourself. And I like that. And on top of the gameplay being great as well, really good fun.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. Yeah, you've definitely sold it to me there.
The fact that you play Frostgrave as well, like, you'll find, you know, the mechanics are very similar in terms of, like, how you're fighting and stuff like that. So you'll find that you pretty much know the inner workings of the game, and it's more the narrative that this brings in. And another great thing I've always taken from that game as well is, like, event cards. I know Joe didn't necessarily invent this mechanic when he wrote Rangers of Shadowdeep, but at the end of each turn, just having the opportunity for something to happen without it getting silly, you know, like, at the end of this turn there's a blizzard, and then at the end of this turn a volcano goes off, and then, like, but you can definitely use that break in turns to bring in some new element or interesting challenge. So I really like that aspect of it as well.
Yeah, it's good to have that that randomness to it. So it's not just like you say, like chess, where you're pushing it around without knowing exactly what's going to happen. I like that sort of unknown.
I've went too far with stuff like that in the past. Again, just playing about with solo stuff, but it was like, you know, I'm joking about the snowstorm, then the volcano and that, but I literally did have that. And I was like, okay, this mist comes in and suddenly all of the rain just halved. So that, I've got to make a note of that. And then, like, it rains really bad, so everyone's movement is affected. So I've got to make a note of that. And before you know it, it's like a stack of different conditions that there comes a certain point where I'm like, I can't even keep up with this anymore. Like, I've ruined it. So I had to dial that back quite a lot. But that's all part of the learning process too, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's half the joy, isn't it? Working out what works and what doesn't.
Aye. And I think with these things as well, sometimes you're better to go, like, completely overboard and dial it back rather than just, like, try and gradually increase the temperature on a bland experience until it turns semi-exciting. Like, just go for the most ridiculous thing and then just keep dialing it back until it seems fun enough. So
I think that's a good ethos. I like it.
What's next for you then, in terms of, like, you got a game in the diary or that, or you get some painting done this evening?
So Thursday night we're playing Mothership, which is like a horror role-playing game. A friend of mine's running that while I'm planning the next campaign. And then from a miniatures point of view, I'm planning a multiplayer Space Weirdos game based on a heist where everyone's a different gang trying to get... from a crashed rhino, trying to get some sort of treasure. But I want to do it so that the only way they can get the treasure is by two of the groups working together. So then there's going to be unknown about who's working with who, whether they're going to betray each other at the end and run off with it. And my friends are quite devious like that. So I think we could have a lot of fun with that. So I'm planning that one for, I don't know, maybe next month. Or maybe pre-Christmas, as a pre-Christmas game to get a few of us together. And then I'm painting probably over the weekend. It's funny you should mention Stormcast. I picked up a couple of Stormcast figures because I want them for the D&D campaign. And I want to paint them up as like a bit of a bad guy. So that's something I'm trying to work out the color scheme for that at the moment. I don't want to do the bog standard GW color scheme for that, make them a bit more evil looking. So that's on the radar as well.
The betrayal mechanic there, and the fact that nobody knows that, somehow randomly put me in mind that, remember there was a TV show with Jasper Carrot, I think it was called Golden Balls, and the players they would I don't think I ever actually watched it, but I had it explained to me quite a lot where. They work together to build up this pot of money, and then at the end, I'm probably making a mess of this, but at the end it was like they could both agree to split it, but if one of them actually secretly said, I'm taking it, and the other person had said, we'll split it, the one who said they were taking it got to keep it all. So people got totally done over. I think if they both said they were secretly going to keep it, nobody got it. So there was a whole betrayal thing. And they'd apparently, they'd made a special series or episode for the people that got massively done over on it. So, you know, they'd got to the final and they'd been betrayed and got nothing. So these were all people that had been betrayed. And then at the end of it, like, it's the two of them and they're like, look, we've both been betrayed before. Like, let's be sensible about this. We'll split it. And the guy's like, yeah, yeah, definitely. And then one of them took the money. The other guy, he was just like head in his hands crying. So hi, there you go. We'll add Jasper Carrot to the Weatherspoons, Barry Gibb, Manticore lore of this podcast.
Exactly. I think you've hit on something there, though, is you have to be careful with the sort of betrayal mechanics, that you're not going to upset people. There's a game, a board game called Diplomacy. I don't know if you've ever played that.
And, I've heard of it, but never played it.
It's notorious for being, for friendship breaking, because people betray each other. It's all about negotiating. You can't win it on your own. You have to negotiate with other people, and they're backstabbing. And yeah, so there is a word of caution there for me, that I don't create something where suddenly everyone starts having a massive fight in real life.
Well, good luck. We'll catch up again and find out how it's all going. Maybe you won't have a gaming group anymore because everyone fell out with each other, but you had a good run.
Exactly. That's right. That's right. Yeah, I'll have to be careful. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So thanks very much for having a chat, Tom. Anywhere you would like to point the listener to that they could go and check out?
Yeah, so my blog's on D&D at work, so that's dndatwork.com, and I post there weekly about games and how it relates to leadership and leadership development, and also how some of the leadership development aspects can be fed back into your game as well. Which is a very niche topic, I realise that. But that's that's where people can find me. That's my email address is on there as well. And if people want to get in touch, they can get in touch through that.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.